I'm reading from Proverbs 18, 1 through 8. The one who lives alone is self-indulgent, showing contempt for all who have sound judgment. A fool takes no pleasure in understanding, but only in expressing personal opinion. When wickedness comes, contempt comes also, and with dishonor comes disgrace. The words of the mouth are deep waters. The fountains of wisdom is gushing stream. It is not right to be partial to the guilty or to subvert the innocent in judgment. A fool's lips bring strife, and a fool's mouth invites a flogging. The mouths of fools are their ruin, and their lips a snare to themselves. The words of a whisperer are like delicious morsels. They go down into the inner parts of the body. I'm going to say a few words about the canon, the books that we call the Bible. We have a canon that basically was brought to us by Martin Luther when he broke with the Roman Catholic Church. Canon is a Greek word. In the ancient sense, it meant a measuring rod or a rule. In English, it's come to mean a collection of books, in our case, sacred books. The word came to us through Latin, through Old French and into Old English, and it describes the books that we call the Word of God. The canon is a Protestant canon, I guess I would say. The Catholic canon contains 14 books that are not in the canon that we use. Some of those books are the four books of the Maccabees, the Wisdom of Ben Sirach, Baruch, the Story of the Three Children, and one of my favorites is Bel and the Dragon. Most of these books were written in the intertestamental time, even though Nehemiah and Ezra are early in the Jewish Bible. They were probably the last books written in the Catholic Bible. John mentioned a few weeks ago that the Samaritans only used the Torah, which is Hebrew for the first five books. In Greek, it's called the Pentateuch. And the rest of the books that the Jewish people used are not considered a part of the canon by the Samaritans. In the New Testament canon was probably mostly assembled at the First Council of Nicaea, which was called by Constantine the Great and took place in Asia Minor, which we now call Turkey. The object was for these 300 bishops to sort out which books were divinely inspired and which books were the works of man. Most of those books are considered by the Catholic Church the works of the Church Fathers. Some examples are Tertullian, Eusebius, which is one of the ones I've studied, especially in regard to his opinions about the Trinity. And some of the earlier works were 1st and 2nd Clement and Polycarp and the Martyrdom of Polycarp. Again, these books were rejected by the Council of Nicaea as not being divinely inspired. In regards to the Jewish Bible, what we often call the Old Testament, there are somewhere between 100 and above books that were rejected by the Jews from their Bible. They're collected in a large two-volume work called the Pseudepigrapha, and there's much of interest there as well. The the Jewish people have what's called the Talmud. There are actually two Talmuds. There's the Palestinian Talmud, which was assembled in what we now call Israel. The Babylonian Talmud was assembled by the people in the captivity in Central Asia, what's now Iran and Iraq. Both of those Talmuds run to somewhat over 50 volumes. There's also the Mishnah, which is a collection of rabbinical sayings in regard to the Old Testament. In the early times when the Greeks, the Macedonians, when Alexander the Great conquered Palestine, the Jews were again scattered through the empire, and the Septuagint was the Jewish Bible in Greek. And why it's called the Septuagint is that legend has it that 70 scholars gathered on an island and they translated from the Hebrew and the Aramaic into the Greek, 70 scholars in 70 days. And that's still extant. You can have a Septuagint. Then the Vulgate was translated from the Greek, the Hebrew, and the Aramaic into Latin. And that's the book of the Bible that is used today, until today, by the Catholic Church, the Roman Catholic Church. Yes?
Translations like the Cotton Patch Bible and the Good News and the Message, can they do that and still keep whatever divinity or inspiration was in the original?
Thank you, Robin. In English, there are somewhere in the neighborhood of 100 translations and versions. And the difference between a translation and a version is that the scholars that assemble to do a translation work with the original languages, the Hebrew, Aramaic, and Greek. And the versions are ones that are assembled by a group of people who mostly work with English and translate, I guess you would say, into their own words, like the Amplified Bible and some of the ones that you mentioned that are paraphrased. They're meant to make it easier for people to understand in the vernacular or more modern speech. As far as their validity, my experience tells me in translating is that most of the translations are very, very accurate. If a person wants to read a literal translation, there's what's called Young's literal translation, which is it's kind of choppy because it's literal, and that's a good reference. I use it quite often. Bible Gateway, which is a website, you can take any verse and you can read it in any English translation, as well as I believe that it's somewhere between 30 and 40 other languages. And so I guess my best answer would be any version or translation that you are comfortable with would be okay. And if you doubt something that you're reading, then read some of the other translations. It's interesting because the King James Version, which was finished in 1611, still holds up very, very well. It was wonderfully done as far as accuracy. There are always questions. Almost all versions have one of the Ten Commandments says, "Thou shalt not kill." So I translate it, "Thou shalt not murder." I believe that the Hebrew word that is there is more readily translated as murder than to kill, because of course there were wars then, there are wars now, and that's a different thing than murdering. The word Bible comes from the Greek Biblos, which is the general term, it's a nominative case of the general term for a book. And in the Spanish versions are called El Libro, the book. I hope that answers your question to the best of my ability. The canon law began with the church fathers. Some of the ones that I mentioned, Clement, there were two Clements, and Tertullian, Eusebius, Jerome, and has carried all through the Catholic Church. It's passed from pope to pope. The popes and the cardinals in the Vatican expand that law. They have councils. 1962, the council decided that the churches throughout the world would no longer be required to do the services in Latin, and they were able to use the vernacular. So if you go to a Catholic church here in Cadillac, St. Anne's, I believe, the service is in English. They no longer read and speak in Latin. In fact, a lot of the priests no longer even know how to speak or read Latin. So that's kind of a general synopsis of the canon that we have. The books of the Jewish Bible, the Old Testament, are not in the order they were written. And when Ezra and Nehemiah were writing is when a significant number of the Hebrew people came back from the Babylonian captivity. They were allowed to return to Israel, to Judah and Israel. And that's basically where the Old Testament canon ends. And that's where the Apocrypha, the 14 books of the Apocrypha, pick up. The Maccabees, there's four books of the Maccabees which talk about the history of the time when the Greek empires, the Ptolemies and the Seleucids, were losing their grip on their empires. They were the inheritors of Alexander the Great's empire, and the Hebrew people became free again, and they were ruled by the Maccabees. So if you were interested in reading what was happening between the end of the Old Testament and the New Testament, that's a good place to start. And then, of course, in shortly before the time of Christ, the Romans conquered that part of the world and ruled it for some 400 years. And, of course, at the Council of Nicaea, Constantine the Great declared that Christianity would be the official religion of the Roman Empire. And at that time, the bulk of the theology in the New Testament, after the Gospels and the Acts, the most of the remainder of the New Testament are the Pauline epistles. And so Pauline theology is very important to us. I believe that I'm going to close and make it that a brief message. I have to say that I enjoyed this. I'm a bit nervous, and it's difficult for me to consult my notes. I'm basically speaking extemporaneously, which is difficult. And so I hope I was able to give you some information about where our Bible that we use and revere came from. Now we have a moment of silence, and then I will say a brief prayer, and then Marie and Penny are going to preside over our communion.